You're still tuned in to Futa Radio 93.1 FM. It's now time to talk trending issues. Yes, on trending issues, we try to bring in current affairs, we try to bring in various issues and dissect them from various perspectives. To do that, I have my panel of analysts here with me, starting off with S.E. Gunn. S.E. Gunn, good morning and welcome.
Greetings.
Thank you very much, S.E. Gunn. It's a full house as we have Padre with us as well. Padre, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Okay, there is also Sake here with us in the studio today. Sake, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
All right. Now, S.E. Gunn, we will start with you on this particular issue, which is the fact that the Minister of Labour and Employment actually defended his budget, the budget of his ministry and its peristatals before the House of Representatives Committee on Labour. And in a statement, he proposed a mandatory 8 weeks course at a particular institute for all newly elected Labour leaders in the country. What do you think about his reasons for doing that?
No, well, his reasons are clearly stated there. And it is not far from what I've been saying. The need for us to be better equipped, to be better informed, to be better enlightened, so that we are able to work,
make better decisions.
Yeah, make better decisions, you know, and more quality decisions than we've been having, you know. So on the face value, I mean, that is that's a good thing. That's supposed to be something that should be a given. You know, it shouldn't be something that should be making the news per se, because it should just be normal. But I guess that whoever reported this, you know, must have kind of studied the antecedents of Ngige, looked at the prevailing circumstances, and just realized that, well, this is going to be news, you know. This is worthy of discourse. So let's put it out there. And anyone could just dismiss the submission, because one of the things that we want to try to avoid is throwing out the baby with the bathwater, as we commonly speak, you know. So if you are not objective, you could just want to come up and say, what's the meaning of that? What nonsense, you know? What does that mean? But it's a very, very good, you know, course, a very, very good part. It should be normal, you know. We should all be given to understand what we are dealing with, you know, to know properly, so that we do not go afoul of the law. After all, Paul, in talking to the Philippians, you know, was telling them how he was a Pharisee of Pharisees, and how he was versed in the laws because he kept all the laws. Now, for you to be able to keep the laws meant that you knew the laws. And we're talking about over 600 statutes that the Jews were supposed to keep, you know, at that point in time. So you have to have a proper understanding of it. So everyone, every individual, naturally, not just union leaders, you understand? I should think he should make it open to not just union leaders, but to everybody. Like, people like me should be able to go there and apply, you know, so that when tomorrow comes and even they, you know, that are proposing this run afoul of the law, I can tell them that, uncle, in the training you gave us, this is, you are going,
these are the limits.
Yes, you are going, you know, afoul of the law with the way you are doing. So is a good one. But the question is, why is he streamlining to just labor leaders? At the House of Assembly members and senators, are they going to go to the training too? You understand? You understand? Okay. And ministers, all ministers, because all of them are laborers, whether they are casual or they are fully employed, either they are appointed or employed or whichever you put it, they are all laborers. So I expect that all ministers too should go through this, even presidents. Or even those aspiring, they too should go through the training, you know, so that everybody will be on the same page. But because it won't make sense, you know, how will it now turn out, for instance, if this school starts, then these labor leaders go there, they understand the law, then they come out and do some things based on the law, because that is what they were taught
there.
Then, but we will not be confused, because you are going against the law. They will wonder that, okay, why they were being trained. Did you yourself submit yourself to training?
Okay.
You know, so
right.
That for me will make it very, very interesting.
Let me now come to Sarke with this. He, Ngige, in the statement actually explained that the mandatory training would also enable the unions to know the limits of their powers and where the powers of their employers do stop. A lot of people are alleging that this might be because of the drama that went down between ASUU, the federal government, NLC, and all of that. What is your take?
I think Ngige is basking in the euphoria of his, you know, of his fight against ASUU, having won a legal battle and having forced a return back to school, and is maximizing, you see, the victory. For me, like Essigon said, it will have been a good thing, not just for the labor union or ASUU members, but everybody. But for me, if we know the antecedent of our leaders, this sounds, you know, more or less a reactive measure. And like I said yesterday, Ngige will have been in a better state to say this and insist. If in the last 4 weeks, FG have done something, the best they have done is half salary. So if you are pointing an accusing finger at your neighbor who has a mastic in his eyes, and then you have an iroko tree in your own eye.
A forest, actually.
Somebody have a mastic in his eyes, then you have an iroko tree in your eye. Then I think we should know, should cast the first stone.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, that's a particular point that I made. That question I asked seems to be buttressed even more by reading further into his statement that is in Ngige, where he says, and I quote, "You know, a lot of people who answer labor and union leaders are not trained in the labor laws of the country, including those who are professors." What's your take, Padre?
Well, knowledge is very, very important, because in everything we do, we have to show that we know what we are doing, and that in every decision we take or in every choice we make, we have to also show that we are doing the right thing. Actually, what Ngige is proposing, there is nothing bad about it, because when you are picked for an office, you are supposed to be trained for the office. Sometimes it may just be some kind of workshops, it may just be some kind of seminars. For instance, I know that sometimes the ministers, they usually have what they call, I've forgotten the name they have for it now, but it's a kind of program that brings all of them together, where sometimes experts are brought in to deliver talks. They try to have a kind of post-mortem of whatever they have done within their offices and what is expected of them. Training is very, very important. But then, as an individual, it is also expected that you need to learn how to train yourself. For instance, if I'm a union leader, I should know what the International Labour Organization is saying about whatever, about everything that's concerns me and concerns the union I am representing. I need to know the trade laws of the country and things like that, so that when I'm arguing or when I'm making arguments
or
on
demands.
Behalf or demands on behalf of my union, I will know what I'm saying, and I will know what is expected of me and what is expected of my employer or the government I'm trying to deal with. See, unionism is very, very important. You could see the difference of what we have in sectors whether we have unionism and sectors where we don't have unionism. I am not saying that even in those sectors where you have unionism that things are 100% okay, because sometimes I also feel that some of these unionism we shout about, some take it personal. They use it to drive their personal motives and everything. For instance, in an organization, maybe probably the head of organization is sharing the money, nobody talks, but the moment he begins to eat the money all alone, that is where you will not hear that union is shouting or this or that. Sometimes the question is usually that all these demands you are making, all this fight you are doing, are they altruism, altruistic in nature, or you are just fighting for your own personal interest.
Okay.
So these are issues, mm-hmm. and it is good that we kind of update ourselves on whatever basis that we evolve ourselves in. Mm-hmm. But then, leaving that apart, talking about it objectively, but we also know that Ingige is somebody who likes to throw shades, and you could see mm-hmm. that he was so particular about talking about professors. We know, we already know those Ingige is trying to hit at, and that is part of the problem I have with him. Even you as a minister, how much of training do you have regarding your office as the Minister of Labor and Productivity? How much of the laws do you know? How many seminars, how many workshops at the national level, international level have you attended? This so-called institute that you're saying that people should be mandated to go to such institute, if we are to take it that way, even ministers should be mandated to go to such institute to learn
leadership training.
For literal, yeah, because look at what training. Look at what we are facing. See, we cannot rule out unionism. Because we don't have unionism at the level of primary school and secondary school. Look at what is happening to our primary and secondary education. Those teachers can't talk. They can't do anything. Not even their superiors, who are the headmistresses or headmasters or the principals. Even though I know that we have ANCOPS, that is the Association of Nigerian Principals of Secondary Schools.
Yes.
But how far do they go in their demands and in their discussion with the government? Do they put in demands for the government to meet? It is whatever the government throws at them that they take. Look at what we are having at the national level. We have a Minister of Education who has been the longest serving Minister of Education. By 2023, that man would have spent 8 years as Minister of Education, but he didn't do anything about education. He's an accountant and probably a journalist by profession. So you see, so these are issues. He that has been there for the past 8 years, how many seminars has he gone for? How many trainings has he gone for?
Okay.
You could, even the ones that affect his department directly, we know what he did or what he was unable to do. To even have a discussion with students was a big problem. We all knew how that meeting ended. And then the man from the Ministry for Labor and Productivity took on all the shine and was almost in charge of everything. And so at a point in time, some of us were asking, please, who is the Minister of Education in this country? It's as if we didn't have one when all of these matters were going on. We are talking about ASU being paid half salary. We have not heard a word from him. If we have heard anything, it's to rant about his failure and his incapability to do his work. And then we are still expecting him to do the right. See, we have to. For me, I'm trying to look at it in a holistic manner.
Okay.
Yes, at the surface level, like Esigo said, it is very, very, very good. In fact, people should go for training. In fact, if you look at, I don't know what goes on within the civil service. Even in education now, I have heard a few professors complaining. Before, universities sent their lecturers for studies outside the country. But now it's no longer the case, because probably it's part of the fault of the federal government or part of the fault of the university system. I don't know. At the civil service level, how many of these civil servants are sent to increase their capacity? Probably the worst that we have happening is that we still ask them to come and pay. We have a situation presently in this state whereby people are paying over 100,000 for capacity building. And you are asking, is in private sector, is that how it is done?
Okay.
In private sector, you see companies spend money on their personnel because they know that the output of whatever you have gone there to get is going to be for your benefit. To your own benefit.
All right. Saki has something
to say that I think we should also endeavor to train our political leaders on conflict resolution and leadership. See, for me personally, this is what I see. Most of our leaders, they take issues personal, and it's more of their ego against what should be done. Once you place your emotion on the table, you are not going to take the right decision. Your opponent may be wrong, but you may keep quiet and do the right thing for the central good of all and find a way of resolving, you know, whatever you have. We've not learned that. We've seen consistently over the years leaders taking decisions because they felt they were disrespected, because they felt you were not in awe of them. We have leadership problem here because when you talk to people, especially over issues, they feel you are attacking their personalities rather than the issues. And that is where the problem is. We don't seem to understand what objectivity is. I may tell you, I don't like your act or your decision. It doesn't mean I don't like your person. It doesn't mean I'm not your friend. I'm just condemning that particular act that you
not
have taken.
Not condemning you.
Not you. We should get to that level of understanding that I may not like a particular decision. Does not mean I don't like you. That is the major problem we have. Okay. Most times our leaders module everything together. If you say so, they say you're against their party. If you say so, look, this is Nigeria. We all have stakes. And it's not possible for 200 million to be in the same place and agree together on the same issue. It's not possible. You don't even have twins. Agree on the same color or this or foods to eat. So how much more 200 million people?
Yes. Who
are, and that is where maturity comes in. I must learn to accept your view without throwing away my own and without feeling offended by the way you put it.
Okay. Very interesting. Thank you very much for bringing that out, Sake. Now let's come to S. Egon on this other issue, which is the fact that starting from the 1st of January 2023 next year, the Joint Admissions and Matriculations Board has said that communications between them and regulatory bodies for higher institutions and all tertiary institutions in Nigeria will be through a single unified platform called the Integrated Brochure and syllabus system. Some are not seeing this as an innovative idea. I mean, it's not exactly rocket science, but it's a welcome one, don't you think?
You see, there was a time. It's not as if I got tired, you know, but you see, the civil service and the political class, they've been at the forefront of dealing with us as a nation, as a people. Why? Because of the things they do. You know, yesterday it was Father Leo that was talking about people being employed and getting paid
without
doing anything because we don't have functional refineries. But we didn't hear that the workers have been retrenched.
Oh, they are paid their salary.
And I did say that is part of why NLC or labor unions are not able to really be efficient because they know. Because when we talk about who forms the greatest percentage in these labor unions, they are civil servants. They are the ones that know where the skeletons are buried. They are the ones that know how these things work. They are the ones that push against innovation, especially when they don't understand it. And when they feel it affects them. Because for them, it's all about survival. Now, you see, there's nothing wrong with survival. Nothing wrong with that. But there's something wrong in thinking that life is all about survival. And that there are no other ways apart from the way you know, to survive or to thrive. You get my point? So, what JAMB is doing, that we are talking about it now, yes, should be sad that we are just catching up on that in 2022. Should be sad, but this is Nigeria. This is Nigeria where a lot of times we come very late to the party, like very, very late. And then when we eventually do, our entrance is mega. It's as if, I mean, things that have been settled.
Yes,
by others. Yes, but we are just coming to the party and then we make so much noise about it. We celebrate as if, wow, we got to the moon. Some other nations have gone to the moon and back. They are thinking of going to Mars and other places. We have not even near there. The best we have done is to go and do rockets to launch in other places. We don't have the capacity to run rockets in our own nation. And because we're able to launch rockets in other places, if you recall how we made so much of a noise about it then. Look at the Nigerian Air that we're talking about. 40% Ethiopian airline or thereabouts. And we made so much noise about it. sign 1 billion to law that should have been, you understand, normal. It makes so much noise about it. Pay people salary. Make so much noise about it. But this is a good development, and I'm hoping that it will catch on. Because sincerely, what they said, in this age and time where I can stay here without leaving the shores of Nigeria, open a bank account in US, in UK and other countries, and I don't leave this place, and fund the bank account, and operate the bank account. But here, in my own country, I have to physically go to the bank to do some things. You get my point? All right. So, Jamb now coming to say this, that to avoid writing letters, and in some universities, they are still carrying memo up and down with paper.
I was going to bring that point. Now, let me bring it to Padre. I was going to bring that point to Padre. This is definitely going to reduce this, you know, carrying of papers up and down. Do you agree with S.E. Gunn? It's not exactly innovative, but it's a welcome development.
Yes, I totally agree, because we are in the 21st century. And what drives the world today is technology. And technology makes things to be so easy and fast. It's all about speed and efficiency.
Efficiency.
And sometimes...
The ease of the process.
The ease of the process is just unimaginable when technology comes into place. But unfortunately, we still live in a country where we do a lot of paperwork. And that is why there are lots of anomalies within our system. Lots of corruption. Because what you do on paper sometimes, to even trace it, sometimes I commend auditors. When auditors go to places to audit accounts, because you are dealing with papers and you have to look at every single one of them to make sure that the financial activity of such place is perfect. But when it comes to education, that Jamb is doing this, it's a welcoming idea. But is it something out of the blues? No. Is it something that we need to keep on praising about? The answer is no. But like I said, this is Nigeria. You know, where they say half bread is better than none. We are in a country where we have settled for the least. So when we find the least, we should even be happy about it, that the least is at least happening. I know that some universities on their own are trying a lot to improve in technology. I know Futa, for instance. I know that University of Ibadan, for instance, if you want to get your transcript, you don't have to go to the school. You can do a lot of things online. But we still have some schools in this country. If you want to get your transcript, you have to walk and go back and go front and go back and go front. And they will tell you, they will send the transcript to your school of choice, and you will be waiting and waiting and waiting, and you may not see anything. But with what Jamb is introducing, we have to give it to Oloyede. Oloyede is actually trying. I'm sure that is why the federal government is still leaving him where he is presently. He's doing a lot with Jamb. Remember, there was a time that Jamb was not CBT. It was paper.
We're shedding.
A lot of examination malpractice. But now that is fading off gradually. It's not yet perfect, but the system is getting better in that regard. And that is all we keep on saying. See, we are not saying that when we change some of these things that we are going to have the result overnight. But then it gives you a hope that something better is going to happen in the future. At least you have some confidence that now I am on the right direction. I'm taking the right step. I'm taking the right decision. The outcome of that decision may be late, but definitely it will come. The effect may be slow, but definitely it will keep happening.
Yes.
Because I know,
updating itself, yes.
Because look at the way the thing was explained. NUC comes to you, they do some things, you still have to wait and carry it in a memo and sent to Jamb. You know how many memos come in for Jamb in a day or in a week or in a month before somebody, and probably you have somebody who is sitting at the table, is supposed to go through it, who may have some sort of kind of laziness as part of his or her attitude, and will not open these papers to look at them in time. Right. And then you put the paper in a file, you start passing it from one table to the other for them to be aware or to give approval, then before you reach back to the... But now... It's just within the confines of your office. All you just have to do is to press some buttons on your system, on your computer, and whoever is over there is responding immediately, or is getting that information immediately.
All right.
I think it's what we are seeing happening with these examination bodies. I feel that it's a good step in the right direction, mm-hmm. and I hope that we can continue and others can key in. For instance, we've talked about WAEC the other time,
yes.
where you can check your result, mm-hmm. people can verify your result. In that same statement, you heard what the leaders of the polytechnics are saying, that now if you are getting your certificate, there may be a barcode mm-hmm. on your certificate, mm-hmm. so that anywhere you take that certificate to is yes. just to scan the barcode to be able to authenticate the originality of that certificate. I hope universities, not just universities, the tertiary institutions, mm. universities, polytechnics, monotechnics, colleges of education, and other examination bodies can begin to key in into this aspect. You say right. it's a graduate. If it starts from one sector, before you know it, it will start spreading gradually to other sectors.
Okay, now let me ask Sir Kay this. What do you think the effects, the ripple effects of this, good or bad?
I want to let you know that our not embracing technology and our not doing the right thing oftentimes is personal, and it's because it pays some people.
Mm.
For example, if you have to mark paper and put it manually, it gives room for falsification. But just imagine if you write on a test or an exam online and then the result comes out and anybody can assess it, it becomes difficult for manipulation. Oh, are you telling me that our leaders don't go out, their children are outside, you can in tertiary institution abroad, you do your assignment online, you submit, you get your result, you know, you don't even have to be in school physically. If we have upgraded to that level, maybe strike action will have become ineffective in Nigeria, or maybe we'll have find other means of, you know, I mean, conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. If, for example, students can stay at home and then they can interact with their lecturers and then assignments are done, projects are done, you know, and all those things. But you
except
see,
for practical.
Except for practicals. But we have refused to do this because it will not allow room for manipulation and corruption.
Okay.
That is it. So it's not as if some people have not seen the light. Mm. The light has actually gone. They have seen the light. But they prefer that people be in darkness so that they can maximize from ignorance or darkness. That is the reality on ground.
Now, let me quickly just ask you this. You actually brought up a point that was very interesting, saying that, you know, some of our leaders have their children schooling, you know, outside the shores of the country. There's a report out there, this one coming from the Nigerian Tribune, that indicates that there was a 12.3% increase in the number of students from Nigeria studying in the United States for this 2021-2022 academic year. We've been talking about the brain drain in the system for a while, but it seems like it's not just workers who are leaving, but students as well are trying to find ways to jackwa, as they always say it.
You see, if we assume that this start and stop, especially in the tertiary institutions, is not affecting people, we should wake up. It will amaze you the number of students in the university in the Republic of Benin. In nowadays, I don't think anybody want to go to Benin. Togo, Ghana is still Nigerians are going anywhere except Nigerian private university. Why? Because the little funds they have, they want to make sure that their children graduate at the right time. You want to send your ward to the university to do a 6-year course, maybe a medicine or 5-year course, as engineering course. And then it takes 8 years to graduate. And those 8 years, nobody is going to refund you. After those 8 years, there's no guarantee of job. After those 8 years, when you have expended more money than you expected, does not mean that the salary your ward will collect will justify it. So it's not people are using that as an avenue to jackpa. You study there, then you get opportunity of employment there, stay there. Then take your sister, take your brother. That's how it goes. It's a survivor plan.
Yes.
And what has led to this? Bad governance. Nothing else again is bad governance.
Okay.
If the Minister of Education and Labour will play this back, if this had happened when they were in school, And then it's not happening in their days. They should be ashamed of themselves.
All right. You're still listening to Trending Issues on The Morning Show, Futa Radio 93.1 FM. SC Gun is here. Sake and Padre are here as well. Now, SC Gun, let me come to you with this next issue. Usually, the gross domestic product, GDP, is a monetary measure of the market value of all the final goods and services produced and sold in a specific time period by countries. Now, why am I saying this? I'm saying this because the federal government has said, according to some reports, that the consistent growth in Nigeria's GDP has not really had a positive impact on the lives of its citizens. Now, this is coming from the Minister of Finance, Budget and National Planning herself at a summit in Abuja. What's your take?
Praise the Lord. That's where I start from. Because we've been saying this for years. But now they are catching up. As always, we come late to the party. You see, they have said what we have been saying.
They finally agreed.
Now, we will say, you people say, economy grow. GDP this one, that one. You bring statistics, you rejoice, you make noise, you make everything. And I ask the simple question. This thing that people are reading on the newspaper, page of newspaper, where is it in the life of the people?
In their bank account.
Because the only way that will make sense is if they actually went to the market, for instance, and had that weight. Ororo that used to be 1,000 naira per liter has gone back to 500 naira per liter. Then they will say, oh, yes, there's GDP has grown. But when you are conversant with churning out statistics that doesn't reflect reality.
From your office.
That will mean that you have been telling a lie all these years. And even now, it's difficult to even believe you. Because there's been so much level of distrust that...
If they're telling us the truth now,
you understand.
We'll know the difference.
To be able to... So that is why it's just good to stay on the path of the truth as leaders. And that's why I keep telling people that we need to ramp up our knowledge base. See the conversation we're coming... Okay, look at the DMO. The DMO in his budget defense was telling the House of Rep members that, see, we shouldn't have had a debt problem. People should go and read that. It's on Premium Times. He said, why? He said, if only we have been able to just produce the quota allocated to us by OPEC, and the price of crude oil doubled with that period, and the budget benchmark, you understand, was doubled, that means we would have had excess. But we didn't produce up to OPEC, and we have Minister of Petroleum still sitting comfortably in the office as Minister of Petroleum, and nobody is calling him to ask him, your sector is not working. Why? But we will come out to talk once in a while to just say, it's like these people, they have caught on, we have caught on TT. Then you know, let us do as if we are doing something.
Okay.
So Adamu will come out and say, I have failed. Story for the gods. Minister of Finance.
And he's still in the office.
Abio, Minister of Finance will come out and say, the people are not feeling his story for the gods. For me, and this is personal, I take all of those statements as mere political statements. Nothing behind it. No compassion for the people. Desire to change it. No desire to do anything about it. It's just, let's pacify some people. You know, some people like to hear these things. They are intellectuals. So when we give to them, it will appear as if we are doing something. I'm not going to take that bobo.
Okay.
It doesn't work.
All right.
We can build ourselves to that level where when they serve us such bobo, we will just discard it from front, as in straight off.
All right. Now, Padre, she actually listed some of the factors that have led to this, citing inflation. You know, the inflation is mainly affected, or the food component is the part that is most affected by this inflation, and that this food inflation is driven largely by high costs of transportation and the high costs of energy in its own turn, and all of that. Reading that statement and all of that, Essigone has said that he didn't feel the compassion. But what do you think? What do you feel she was saying? Is this just a politician or a minister at the right place, giving the right speech?
First thing, I want to address our people listening to us out there, because sometimes when we come here to talk, some people will say, you people should mellow it down. You are this, you are that, you are this. But these are facts. These are things that common sense can relate with. And I hope that people who listen to us regularly, they are beginning to see. Because I can't count the number of times we've come to this table to talk about GDP and we say all these things are rubbish and nonsense. Insofar, it does not have any effect on the life of a common man on the street. How do you say that the economy of a country improves? You look at the standard of living of the people. That is how you do it. And that begs the question, or that makes us to question whatever those people have been doing all this way. So I usually say this, and I'm not going to claim to have the knowledge that I don't have. I am not an economist. I am not an auditor. I am not an accountant. I don't know much about some of these social sciences. But then, with my own basic knowledge of the economics we've been taught in school, with the little readings that I've done, and with the little common sense that I have, because I've gone to school, one of the things education does is that it helps you to be able to permeate through
areas. Don't be humble, Padre. Add your experience. Stop being humble.
It will help you to permeate through any area.
Any field, yes.
Any field, at least to be able to say something, or to be able to understand, grasp some basic concepts about it, or some basic understanding.
True.
And the question I want to put to them is, whenever you were doing these statistics, what were your measures? How did you do it to come to the fact that your GDP is growing?
What were the variables you put in?
What are the variables? What instruments did you use? I don't get it. If you say your economy is growing, and yesterday I bought Gary for 10 naira, today I'm buying it for 15 naira, is that growth?
Yeah, that's growth. From 10 to 15 naira.
That's at growth. Least in economics now. Is that growth?
That's their own growth.
Yesterday, I was paying rent of 10,000 naira. Now, I'm paying rent of 11,500.
My salary remains the same.
Yesterday, what 10,000 naira can afford me is no longer what 10,000 naira can afford me now.
Okay.
It's
called incremental progress.
Okay. But then, I get it. You know why they are saying these things? I'm trying to also to be realistic in their own area. When you also hear FIRS. Say that last year we made 6 trillion. As at September 2022, we have made 10 trillion. That points to growth, whether we want to accept it or not, on paper. Because it means that you are having people paying more taxes. It means that because there are more taxes, it also translates to the fact that maybe there are more businesses that are growing up out there.
Multiple taxes,
When custom comes to tell you that, we have made extra 50% increment in what we have been having in the previous years.
Are the realities
I'm
you are
just,
saying.
I'm just I'm
because
not,
they have
I'm
increased
not talking
the
about
amount
the right
of tax.
Figure here. But I'm just trying to make assumptions. But we know that from FRIS, from custom.
Okay.
In fact, sometimes when I hear some of this amount, I ask myself, so why are we still borrowing to be able to fund our budget?
Okay.
Because these increments we are talking about, they are from the non-oil sector increments. Okay. You understand?
Yes.
But holistically, I think there has been some defect from the beginning. Because for me, I will begin to ask that question. In as much as you can point to some of these things on paper, you can say, okay, there is growth in a technological sector. And the likes, even though we may not be making much money again from oil and all of these things. But then, when you want to talk about the economy of a nation, you have to look at how it affects the life of the people. Because economy is not what you see on paper.
All right.
Economy is what you see with your naked eye, with what you feel out there.
Okay. Saki.
You see, simply put, GDP means that what local producers produce and sells to foreigners exceed that which what we consume by foreign good producers.
Yes.
When it exceeds that, you have a trade deficit.
Mm.
When it's the other way, it's a... No, you have a trade surplus.
Surplus.
When it's the other one is trade deficit.
Deficit, okay.
Take our petrol, locally produced, taken outside. I don't know who does that. I don't know how many countries does that in the world. I need information. And then you bring it back and subsidize.
Hmm.
How can we have a GDP surplus with that kind of mentality?
Hmm.
Who does that? Let me put it in layman's language. My father produced 2,000 tubers of yam.
Hmm.
At 10 lira, making a total of 20,000. And I love pounded yam. By nature, I love pounded every afternoon. So yeah, you take it outside to pound for me. Quarter of the tuber of yam, you brought it back for me at 2,000 naira.
Hmm.
Minus the vegetable and I'm eating every day. I'll be in debt.
All right.
But if I buy pestle and mortar, 20,000, 10,000, once and for all, and I employ labor, maybe at 1,000 per day, I'll eat pounded yam every day.
Hmm.
And I won't have headache or stroke.
That's a beautiful analogy.
And that is besides other foreign things we consume. I keep saying this, and I say this with all sincerity, that our leaders consume more foreign products than anybody of us. Check out when they are doing parties. Check out their clothes. Check out their cars. Check out their house. Oh, when we are talking about patriotic Nigerians, don't start with our leaders. Don't start.
Okay.
We love foreign products.
All right.
Than local products.
Okay.
And that is our bane.
Let's allow Skywalker just shed some light on this topic that we have been discussing.
First off, look, they've agreed that something is not working. And I think for me, well, regardless of how long, regardless of how long it took them to admit,
let's allow him.
The fact that they have said something is not working, something is wrong somewhere, I think we can start from there.
Mm.
But if you want to look at it based on, you know, the maths, the statistics, you would see that what they're also saying is somehow reasonable in the sense that our economic base is actually expanding, which of course measures the GDP, because you have the medium, the small medium enterprises, you know, they are the ones basically helping our economy to thrive as it is today. Mm. In fact, 80% of the employment that we have in Nigeria today are domiciled, you know, with this people, because they are the ones churning out the work, regardless of how difficult it is, you know, that the economy is performing, with the fact that we have not got people have access to monies, especially these small businesses. Mm. You know, the banks would not want to give them money. They would prefer to give those ones who would go and spend it on petrol subsidy, because they know that they can get their own share quickly, you know. So that is the reason why at the end of it, regardless of how much expansion that we have in terms of GDP, if you then compare it with other sectors, for instance, like transportation, like accommodation, like education, you find out that those aspects, those sectors are doing poorly. So whatever gains that you make based on your GDP is all swallowed, you know, is consumed by the fact that you are failing in these other sectors. And if you also look at the fact that we have a population that is just expanding, and yet our productivity is nothing, you know, compared to our expansion rate, with our productivity, we can't match it with our population. It's like a father who has
He's making 30,000 naira, and yet the bedroom, the factory, the child making
the other room,
this activity. He will not want to put.
He's going very active.
He's hyperactive.
You are making 30,000 naira a month. You are increasing the number of children that you have
per year.
The quality,
of the food. So they boot rice and add water.
The quality of life that those children will live. Is absolutely not going to be anything to write home about, and is this that is exactly what is happening, you know, to our country at the moment. Funds that are supposed to be geared towards, you know, revitalizing the economy, you know, putting it in the right places, providing infrastructure, putting money in education, because these are the things that would help stimulate growth. And growth that would be sustainable enough to go around for everybody. And like I always say, why can't we have a system that works for everybody? Why is it that some people who feel that they have enjoyed this system, this 7 years has made them, you know, fat. They have made money. And then when you tell those people that what we are doing is not working, or that we need to make effort to do something that works for the most vulnerable in the society. I have always said it. If you want to measure the quality of any society, go and look at how they treat the vulnerable, the aged, children,
those
retirees,
retirees.
Yeah.
How do we treat them?
How do you treat them?
Those
who are sick. How do you treat them?
The age. Exactly.
That is what determines the quality of any government or even any society. So if you sit down and because this government has paid you, you go all in the sky to say that everything is okay.
Ah.
Then, of course, there's prosperity, and then, of course, there's God up there.
Okay.
Because, like as it is, nobody lives forever. Go and look at it. Regardless of how you think that you are making, nobody lives forever. We all would pass one day. And when you pass, there's one person that you will still go and give account to. Then we see whether you can bribe that person.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Very interesting take. Esigon, let me come to you on this last topic real quick, real fast, on the fact that yesterday the defense headquarters actually released a list of 19 most wanted terrorist kingpins and commanders under the manhunt of troops and security agencies, including our friend, Beluturji. Now, what do you think about this move, especially as the fact that they have put a 5 million naira reward on the heads of these people for any reliable information that comes their way?
Well, for me, in all of this, what I'm particularly interested in is that we now have a list of people.
At least for us.
You get my point? Mm. Because before now, we'll just hear that they caught a commander, they caught that one, and be like, where did you say that you're looking for the commander? For us to know that, okay, the person you caught is the person that is dead. Like, if you go on Interpol, you will see wanted people. If you go on FBI, you see wanted people. In Global Terrorist Index, you see people on the terrorist watch list.
And their picture.
And whatever, their description, at least their current, whatever. But in Nigeria, I was asking, did we have that? That's supposed to be the job of the police. And it is the army that is doing it. You see, we are standing the mortar upside down and pounding on the back of the mortar. And we are thinking that we are doing something. But this is Nigeria. We usually like to come late to the party. Okay. And we usually like to do as if we are doing something, even though we are not really doing anything. But
maybe, Padre, just finish up.
Well, the issue for me is... the problem I even have with that report is the fact that, yes, it's good that we have a list, but how many persons are having the list?
Okay.
I expect that a list like that and their pictures should be spread via the media. You may feel that, okay, because they are just the people who are disturbing the North, therefore, it is only the people on the North that you should circulate it to.
True, okay.
Because if we have not read that report, for instance, how are we going to be aware that there are some people on the watch list of the Nigerian army?
Okay, thank you very much. Valid points that you have all given. News on the Globe is up next. Keep listening to Futari 93.1 FM.